but it's a protagonist. It's a renowned across the world for his divrei Torah, his clear ability to teach. Every time their tag is in, and I have an opportunity to go and sit by him, I consider him my Rebbe Mori. Every time I have a chance to sit behind my Jew, because I always find his words filled with tremendous insight and meaning that inspires me to my deepest core. And it's a big privilege. He's someone that's influenced me in ways that I can't even begin to describe. So without further ado, I'm very, very pleased. This is a real opportunity. Open your minds, open your hearts, and you have what to gain today.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Thank you, Rabbi Goldfish and Rabbi Wolf. It's great to be here. Do you know that in fast days, in the past, you know how the fast day unfolded? The Gemara says in Tainus that they would daven the entire morning, and then they would each have an interview with the local town's elders and rabbis, and you'd sit there and say, how can I improve myself? It wasn't just fast and eat. It's the day of tshuva, it's the day of introspection. Want to try to be a better person. Sometimes when you try to climb up these huge mountains, you fall. Sometimes you take little hills, a little easier. So let's all try to climb up a little hill today. Nothing major. We're not all of a sudden going to change the world. It's now 9:20. Let's hope that by 4:20, you're not you. You're a different person. And if by 4:20 you're the same you, then the day pretty much is a waste. Day's a wash. Okay, so I know you've got big plans tonight. I got big plans tonight. But right now we're here. We're in the moment. We're fasting. Things happened today. The three things that happened today, interestingly enough, were not incredibly tragic. It's not like Tisha B'Av or even Shavuos or V'Tammuz, where the Sefer Torah was burnt or an idol was placed in the Beis HaMikdash. Events today, not so tragic. What were the three events? Who knows the three events that happened today? One was really tragic. What was that?
Siege.
What's your name?
Ari.
Ari? Ari or Dani? Ari or Dani? Ari. So the siege of Yerushalayim began, so that's pretty tragic. So you were settled. What's your name?
Leah.
Leah.
The Torah was translated into Greek.
Very good. The Torah is translated into Greek, which cuts both ways. On the one hand, it could be corrupted, and it could be, in some ways, perverted. On the other hand, Torah is being translated for the world to read and to be inspired by. So it's an event that had a little bit of a ominous, I would say, in foreboding sense. The day that the Torah was translated in Egypt by Ptolemy, King Ptolemy, around 300 BCE, they felt that something was changing, but in the grand scheme of history, we want Torah to spread to the world, and this was the first time Torah was translated and the ideas of monotheism were being spread. What else happened? Third thing? Also, tragic, but a sign of a transition. What else?
Ezra has suffered.
Excellent. Ezra and Nehemiah, who led the Jews back from Israel, died, and people died. They didn't die. No one assassinated them. It wasn't like Gedalia. It's not like they died prematurely. They both died. And they were really the last Nevi'im. And we no longer have prophecy, but now we transition to the world of Torah Shavata and Chachamim. It was an end of a period, let's say. I remember being at Rabbi Soloveitchik's funeral, and I just couldn't imagine how the world could go on. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't die a tragic death. He died, but I couldn't imagine a world without Rabbi Soloveitchik. A couple years ago, my Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein passed away. I was crushed. I mean, he died a little bit younger. In today's world, people are a little bit older. But he didn't die a young man. He died an older person. It's the end of an era. And now there are other people that obviously can't be as great and replace them, but, you know, you move on. So it's not as if we're sitting in the corner, Tisha B'Av style, in mourning. It's not Shavuos or Betamuz, where we know 3 weeks away we're going to be sitting. It's a different feel of a day, so let's try to shift it more from the mourning towards self-improvement. I'll try to climb up a little hill. Okay? We're finishing Sefer Bereishis. As we reach the end of Bereishis, there's a coalescence. Everyone's together. Throughout most of the Sefer, there's division, strife, selection, rivalry. You're in, you're out. Now, Heyasvu. Everyone's together. Gathering. Surrounding the bed. Everyone's in. Jewish people are ready to roll. Ready to change history. The heart. It's hard to change history. We're still doing it. It's hard. Remember, anti-Semitism isn't random, because we are the people who are meant to change history. No one likes whistleblowers. We are God's people. The Rebbe Rav Amital, I'm sure you've heard of those of you in the Goldfish issue, would always tell us the following story, the cool story, that in the shtetl, there was a man named Mendel. Mendel. And Mendel's job was to wake everyone up all during Chodesh Elul for early davening. early davening, slichos, and he was relentless. If you tried to snooze a little, no way. You don't press the snooze button on Mendel. He'll pull you by the lapel. He'd toss cold water on you. He'd tickle your toes. I mean, this guy, no one slept. And then it comes Erev Rosh Hashanah, and poor Mendel is exhausted. So during slichos, which we know Erev Rosh Hashanah, you say a lot of slichos, Mendel is falling asleep. You can't keep his head up. Everyone in the room starts taking their pieces of paper and they crumble it up and they start tossing it at Mendel to wake him up. He's getting better, but his paper's up. He looks at everyone in shul. He says, guys, give me a break. I'm exhausted. I'm not thinking my eyes open. Let me sleep a little. So the whole community looks at him as Mendel. Wait a second. You kept this up all Chodesh El. The entire Chodesh El, you didn't let us sleep, but now you think we're going to let you sleep. You want to catch some Z's. You kept us up the whole month. Guys, girls, we are the Mendela of the world shtetl. We kept the world awake for 2,000 years. For 2,000 years, we didn't let them fall to savagery and barbarism. We didn't let them drink each other's blood and eat each other's meat. We talked about morality and society and ethics and spirituality. And we don't let them believe that God could be physical. It's a joke, a fish, a planet, a tree. God has a sun. And then in the modern period, we crusaded for social equality and for justice and for the rights. And we kept the world awake for 2,000 years, morally. And now, it's at the end of history. We just want to go back to our country and go to sleep in Israel. Now the world's like, whoa. You kept us awake for 2,000 years. You think we're going to let you go to Israel and just go to sleep and relax a little? Throw a couple rockets at us. Not that I'm trivializing it, but that's what's happening. I actually need that. That's my shit at some point. Okay. I thought you were talking about today. Okay. What happens when your notes become a prop? There's a problem here. Okay, so let's try to climb up a little mountain in half an hour. Be a better person, different person at 4:30. What time is the fast over?
5:45.
That's not even fast. It doesn't count. Like, it's a half a fast. I went to our Lichtenstein share. We started, Lichtenstein always ended share half an hour late. We never ate lunch. He taught us to, you know, not to care about our stomachs. We would end share at 1:25. In those days in Israel, in the 1980s, Israel was a very poor country. And there's not a lot of food. So they put the food on the tables, and whatever food they put out on the tables, people got to eat. And there's no extras, no spare, no cafeteria. Lunch started at 1 o'clock. The Lichtenstein ended share every day at 1:25. We would starve. I mean, he had nothing. He was teaching us that to care about our stomachs. Remember one day, one boy from Haifa, he had it. He was tired of starving. So this is, imagine, girls and guys, in a room with 100 boys listening to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein give shir. A room of 100, literally. And this guy's name was Boaz. We used to call him Boozy. He decided, that's it. He's getting up at 12:59. He's getting lunch. Because he's tired of this mind over matter game. You know, mind over your stomach game. So he's like waiting to get Rav Lichtenstein's rhythm to see when he's looking up and looking down so he doesn't have to see him. He times it. He runs out of the room. And Rav Lichtenstein, picks his head up and sees Uzi leaving. He says, Uzi, shmor makom l'kula. Which in Hebrew means, Uzi, save space for everyone. Talk about toast. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein calls him out. So I still see this guy here once in a while. He's like a grandfather, whatever. I say, hey, Boozy, shmur makom l'kulam. He cracks up. He buckles over laughing. Okay, so we're reading Bereishis. Bereishis ends with the people ready to roll, ready to change the world. It begins with the creation of our world. And at the apogee, the pinnacle of everything. I don't just mean those trees, our country, our planet. I mean the entire cosmos. I mean everything that exists. Let your mind wander. Let your imagination spread. Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and there's nothing that exists that Hashem didn't create, you guys, human beings, Homo sapiens, the apogee, pinnacle, perfection. And when Hashem describes, and the Torah describes Hashem creating us, then just say Hashem spoke. You can say for gracious Hashem speaks. Yehi Rakia, Yehi Or, Yikavu Hamayim. A lot of talking going on in Parshas Bereishis. But when He created us, Vayipach Biapav Nishmas Chayim. You ready? It's incredible the Pasuk says this because it almost sounds like it's Kfirah. Hashem, when He created us, did like this. You watching?
He breathed into us. Vayipach b'yapach nishmas chayim. He breathed a part of himself into us. Vayi adam lenefesh chayam. Because of that breath and that delivery, we became something special. Nefesh chayam. Why are we special? What makes us unique as a human being? What does it mean to be nefesh chayah? Everything lives. Paramecium's. You guys, studying science. Mitochondria. Small. They. We're all living. So the Targum Onkelos says we don't just live. We speak. Ruach mimalala. We speak. So do birds. So do dolphins. So do whales. And elephants. And ants, in their own way, through chemical transfer. You see ants touch each other, and that ant minor. But animals speak at a very rudimentary level. Where is their food? Where is their danger? Where is their migration? Where is their reproduction capacity, mating ability? They speak to live. Just the bare rudimentary essentials. Food, reproduction, and safety. We speak cognitively, creatively, emotionally, abstractly, collaboratively. Our speech isn't baseline necessary survival mode. We build a world. We imagine abstract concepts. We think of our existence. We articulate our purpose in life. We speak to each other. We convey our emotions. We build relationships. We build communities. We collaborate. When I was your age, the world was a totally, totally different place. And in the last 30 or 40 years since I was your age, nothing new has been discovered. We still burn fossil fuels, and we still fly in tin cans. Nothing different. We haven't discovered some new form of energy. We will, but we haven't yet. We haven't discovered some new magic material. We haven't really solved. We made a lot of medical advances, surgical advances, interventional advances, genetic advances. We're still struggling with cancer. We're still. That really is an incredible time to live, but these are incremental leaps. One day we'll have an exponential leap. We won't need stitches. We won't have cancer. We won't be in any way subject to microbes. So we're still moving in inches rather than in yards. Why is the world different? One thing. The internet. Because we communicate with each other at rapid, incredible pace. And just the ability to speak to each other and share information and pull our ideas across the globe, transform the world. Totally different world. If someone landed from 1980 into this world without having lived the last 40 years, wouldn't know it. Wouldn't imagine it. Their world's probably still old enough to remember that world before there were cell phones in it. Different world. I'm telling you, different world. Can't imagine it. Watch movies. So this is Hashem's gift to us, how we speak. We don't speak like dolphins. We convey our emotions. We don't speak like elephants. We have Congress and Senate and government. We have math equations. We imagine. We dream. We convey. We read. We share. So here's the question of the day. How do you use your tongue? Use it the right way, you're a better person. Use it the wrong way, you're a lesser person. You're wasted. You're taking Hashem's gift and you kill somebody. Now let's start creating awareness about how we use our tongues. It's not just some tool that just works us unconsciously, whatever's on your mind you say. But think about it. Want to be a better person? Greater use of Hashem's gifts? Use your tongue the right way. So let's talk about some of the ways of improper using of your tongue. So the Gemara says in Shabbos that if someone speaks about sexual matters explicitly, very, very dire consequences for that. That's called nibble peh. And that's a shiur all to its own, and I'm sure your teachers are discussing that, because the challenges of pornography in this generation are totally different than they were when I was growing up. And it's really, really dangerous and really bad at many levels. And I'm sure you're having seminars and workshops on that issue. But today, sadly, when people curse, That's not Nibble Pet. People call it Nibble Pet, but it's not. Nibble Pet is pornography. Today's curse words are thrown around so frequently and so preponderantly that when people say them, they're not referring to sexual activities. They're just saying aggressive, useless language. And people use it. And excuse me for saying it, because I don't want to say and use street language, but I just want you to know what I'm referring to. When people use the F word or the S word or other words, I don't even know what they're using. They're not talking about anything, but like one day in the past, at some point, it had some sexual connotations, and it doesn't. It's just street language. It's just verbal thuggery. It's just coarse. It's just ugly. It's not Nibble Pet. Torah Parshas Noach describes the animals coming into the table, and it talks about the animals that are tahar, that you could eat, like cows and sheep, and it talks about the animals that you can't eat. Now, what's the inverse of tahar? What should the Torah say? What's your name? That you should say tame. The Torah doesn't say tame. What, the word tame is pornographic? You say the word tame, it's Nibble Pet? God forbid. I say the word tame every day when I'm learning the Maseches Olas and the Maseches, not Nibble Pet. It's just not Lashon Naki. It's not clean language. So the Torah writes not tame, but a nana tahora. Anyone here ever learned the Maseches Pesachim? What's your name? Okay, so Yolanda, what's the first word of the first Mishnah of Pesachim, or? And it teaches us that Bedikas Chametz is when, during the day of the 14th or the night of the 14th?
It says, like...
So why would you use the word or if you want to refer to the night? It takes the Gemara an entire page, Yolanda, to uncork the meaning. Why? Because, what's the answer? Lashon Hara. Because this is a Masechta about the redemption of the Jewish people. This is Pesachim. This is not Masechta about Metziah. Even Bar Mitzvah is important. It's Maseches Pesachim. Every Pesach, the crack open Maseches Pesachim, and that word that's going to be in the title page is going to be Lila. It's not radiant. It's not beautiful. It's not majestic. Lila isn't pornographic. I don't say the word Lila. It's just not as powerful as the word R. Who knows the first Pasuk in Tehillim? What's the first word of the first Pasuk in Tehillim? Is that it? Ashrei, very good. And if you read the rest of the pasuk, it's a pretzel pasuk. Its grammar is completely, completely disjointed. Ashrei ha'ish, fortunate is a man, asher lo halach. That's Asher Shem, who doesn't follow the wisdom of the evil. Why does David HaMelech write a pasuk like this? Ashrei ha'ish, asher lo halach. He should write the pasuk, arur ha'ish, asher halach. If you follow the evil people and the conniving people, you're cursed. Why does David write a pasuk that's grammatically pretzeled up? Because he wants to start Tehillim with what word? And not with which word? Do you imagine if everyone's in micrography? You know, when people have their Tehillim right above their candles on Shabbos, and that first word is in a big frame, and the first word of Tehillim would be Arur. But Arur is Nibble Pet. It's just Lashon She'eino Naki. Don't curse. Not because it's pornographic, it's just not a clean way to speak. And you know what else? Girls in the back, listen carefully to me. It's also poor language. I sometimes hear these interviews of athletes. How was the game? Oh, it was an effing good game. And how about the party after? Oh, it was an effing good party. And how was your day? What's the weather like today? It's an effing good day, effing weather day. People have one adjective in their vocabulary. If you ask me, I would say, oh, it was a thrilling game, and it was an enjoyable party, and it was a chilling, bone-chilling. Fill your head with words. The more words you have in your head, the sharper you'll experience life. You want to live life in black and white, or you want to live life in color? You know, a lot of you are studying for SATs now. The more words you have, the sharper you process life, the deeper you experience life. They're just all condensed into one adjective or one modifier. You got on a boat right now. We visited the Eskimos in the Arctic Circle. They've got 9 words for snow. Because snow is such a crucial part of their world, they have to distinguish between powdery snow and icy snow and melting snow and fish freezing snow, because snow is their life. We can get by with one word for snow because it's peripheral to our lives. It's just poor language. It's not just aggressive and ugly language. It's just read. Fill your minds with ideas. Learn resolution. Learn magnification. Learn differentiation. Learn the difference between anger, irritation, annoyance, indignation, fury. Those are five different forms of anger. They're not all the same. Mad, rage. Learn those differences, because then your life will be sharp and distinct and crisp and clear, rather than dull and vague and ambiguous and unformed and incoherent and lifeless and shapeless and nondescript. Each of those is different. So stop using curse words because it's ugly language. And stop using curse words because it's just poor language. It's impoverished language. You're just falling back on one word just because you have no other words in your mind, and it's kind of a vicious cycle. You don't need any other words. Another thing to think about. Every single bad trait that you have doesn't have a punishment. You know why? Because Hashem doesn't have to punish you for a bad trait. Because the trait itself is its worst punishment. You know the punishment for being an angry person? Hashem doesn't have to punish you. You know the punishment? You live your life angry. And you know those people who are always angry and always shouting and always screaming and always full of rage and trembling. Not a way to lead your life. And you know the punishment for being jealous? What's the punishment for being jealous? Spend your life always envious of what you don't have, rather than looking internally to what you have, what you possess, and making do whatever you need in life Hashem puts under your own 2 feet. Go have to look elsewhere. You can worry and complain about what you don't have, or you can just simply enumerate what you have and move on and excel. You'd be great with what you have. And you know the punishment for being an egotist and self-absorbed? What's the punishment for being an egotist? Self-centered. You spend your whole life playing for people's approval. Like a monkey in front of the accordion player collecting nickels and dimes. Because you've enslaved yourself to what people think about you. You don't live your life based on conviction and principle, but based on applause and public approval. And it's addiction. And you spend your whole life, and you know it's not just addictive, it's also tiring. Always want to win people's approval rather than just be yourself. Be honest, straightforward, candid, open. And the worst trait, much worse than jealousy, and much worse than anger, and much worse than egotism, kina, taiva, and kavod, the worst is sarcasm. That's the worst. And if you have sarcastic tendencies now, you like making fun of people, root it out. I promise you, your life will be better. And you know who has the biggest danger and temptation to sarcasm? It's the smart people who have that challenge more than the dumb people. I know a lot of smart people. I'm a dumb person. Thank God, Shem didn't make me so smart. Really. The New York Times published an article a couple years ago, and they traced sarcasm to a part of the brain, and mapping the brain, and smart people have a larger part of that brain. And we all know, because some people look at other people, wow, he's such a great, wow, she's so incredible, wow, Sprich is incredible, wow, the Jewish community of King, wow, the state of Israel, these are such good, what? And then some people, yeah, but there's this flaw, and there's that flaw, and there's this problem, and smarter people are always able to find the problem and the flaw, and always able to amplify it, and create hyperbole, and reject the whole, oh yeah, but that person, cynicism and sarcasm. Let me tell you something, okay? My wife and I always want to try to find time to spend together, sneak a couple minutes to watch something on YouTube, and just spend some time together. But she likes comedians. I hate it. I can't take it. Because so much of the comedy is sarcasm and cynicism, and it just rubs me the wrong. I just can't listen to it, making fun of people, body length, and people's body size, and skin color, and between the cursing and the cynicism. So we have to try to find this like clean, respectful, self-effacing comedian that's not about making fun of other people, using curse words, just good, happy comedy, just enjoying life and celebrating life rather than dismissing life. I have a hard time with it. And the greatest punishment for your cynicism, you'll negate everything around you. You'll find the flaw in everything. You'll have a sarcastic comment about it. You'll be cynical about it. And then the circles tighten. And you'll start to be cynical about those closer to you, your friends, your family. And then you know what happens? You've already run through everyone. You've already rejected everything. You've already found the flaw in everyone. And who's left? There's only one person left to be cynical about. Who's that person? Yourself. And then you become the bitter old man in shul, sitting in the corner, for whom nothing is good, and you've owned that difference. And you don't want to be that person, whose view of life is tinted with bitter anger and disappointment. You want to see life through rose-tinted glasses and believe in people. Listen carefully to what I'm about to tell you. You guys believe, I think you believe, that the world is full of bad people. It isn't. 99% of the people in this world are great people. 99% of the people in this world care about you. They care about humanity and will do a favor for you and are selfless and are generous and are good-spirited. Unfortunately, social media is dominated by the 1 or 2% of the people who are evil-spirited and animosity and hostile and racist and dismissive and disrespectful. And I fear for your generation that you're going to view the world negatively rather than positively. Most of the people out there are really good people. And you just take them at face value and you talk to them and you respect them. And you know what? That's pretty much how you can divide the world. You can divide the world more or less into two types of people. Those who show respect to other people, those who don't show respect to other people. And you can see that throughout entire lives. In their relationships, the way they drive, the way they behave in an airport, they behave in public spaces. You either respect others or you disrespect others. And that becomes the foundation of how you live your life. So don't let the internet or social media convince you that the world is full of egotists and cynics and hypocrites and distrustful people. Trust people. That's how you grow religiously. When I close my eyes at night, I think about why I'm religious. I think about my Rebbe, Reb Lichtenstein. I think about his Rebbe, Rebbe Soloveitchik, who I love with just a little bit. I think about my grandparents, and I really trust what they taught me. And the world is not such a trustful place, it seems to you, because everything is shown to be something else, and, oh yeah, that sports hero was a drug addict, and that leader was a sexual predator, and those are the people that capture the headlines. It's the 1% or the 2%. Most people are really doing good things, raising families, living lives, obeying the law, being sensitive to other people. So be careful about the cynicism. Cynicism is dangerous also. Don't shame people. Don't mock people. The internet has created a facade of anonymity. It's hard for anyone. What's your name? Khan? I'm a granddaughter. Good name. If I came over to you, Khan, Chas v'Shalom, in public, and I wanted to shame you or mock you, it would be hard for me. I have to look you in the face. Then I can hide. I just put it on Instagram or Snapchat or social media. I don't have to see you. Just make fun of you. I can just say whatever I want. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's davening to Hashem, 500 tefillos. And Hashem says, stop, no more. But you know how he says it to Moshe? He says, Rablach. I'll post it the very light over the verse. Rablach, what does it mean, Rablach? Why is he saying Rablach? You know why? Because in Parshas Korach, when Korach and his group come to Moshe and say, you've got too much power, distribute some of the power and the authority more equitably, Rablach, Moshe turns to them and says, oh, Rablach, the name of the people. And he's mimicking them. Because they requested Moshe, Rablach, you have too much power, spread it along. So Moshe tells B'nai Korach, Rablach, B'nai Levi, stop this riot. And even though he was right for telling him to stop the riot, he should have been a little more sensitive and not said something like throw back in your face. They said, Rablach, Moshe, give us some power. He shouldn't have said, oh, Rablach, B'nai Levi. So later on, Hashem says, oh, you mimicked the B'nai Korach? And it was totally unintentional. It was totally unintended. But Moshe Rabbeinu has to think about it. You can accomplish so much with your tongue. You can change
the
people's world.
The following please come to the nurse's office. Sarah Epstein, Kira Erber, Sylvia Fischoff, Julia Fluffman, Sam Goldberg.
I want to tell you something that Rav Amital told us.
Eber, Evan
Heinz,
Seth
This is an incredible idea.
And Asher Lefkowitz. Again, Asher Lefkowitz.
To speak about it, Asher Sviggosh, because the last Torah that Yosef and, Yosef and Yaakov were studying was Eglon Rufa. The Lord of Eglon Rufa means that if you find a dead body in the forest, then the local leaders in the proximate cities bear responsibility for that anonymously dead body who was killed on the roadside, and they have to at least offer some type of cereal karma. Why do they bear responsibility? They didn't kill the guy. Because he was staying in their towns, and they didn't escort him. They didn't walk him a few steps on the way out of town. So our Rebbe Rav Amital asked, what do you mean? This guy didn't get killed for the first few steps of the journey. He got killed in the middle of a 12-hour journey. How would your escorting have protected this guy on the road? Why do you bear responsibility for not escorting the guy, and you have to bring a carbon of Egla Rufa, because you didn't walk the guy a few steps or a mile?
The following students, will you come to the main office?
So Rav Amital said,
Hananya Madro,
if you had escorted this person,
Seth Hanauer, Morgan Lazarus, Daphna Kuhn, Jake Bowick, Daniela Schreiber, Gil Goldstein, and Gil Adolter.
So Rav Amital said that had you escorted the person, you would have given that person self-esteem that you care about. And if he had self-esteem, he probably would have defended himself better against the other attack. If you let a guest walk away, you don't care. You say, I don't really care about you. Oh, you don't care about me. I feel less about myself. I'm not able to defend myself if someone attacks me on the road. But if you believe in me and you escort me and you take out your time to walk me a few paces, oh, you care about me? You give me self-esteem. That's the golden chalice. Self-esteem won't get you through this world safely. People that don't have self-esteem become abusive or victims, and you know what? In most cases, both. And how can you give self-esteem to people in your life? How can you make a person seen next to you today feel like better about themselves? People say something nice about them because they give them a chance to go out, because they look pretty, they made a good shot last night, or whatever. How can you give people self-esteem and make them feel better about themselves? That's so you've got, it's now 10 o'clock, you've got 6 hours to be a better person. Now when this day ends, think about your time, think about the power, and use it well, and use it great. Have a great, great day, everyone, and use it well.
Yeah. You're welcome. It's good to see you guys. Yeah, it's my pro. 11th grade, like, office.
Thank you so much.
Jacob
Rifkin.
Jacob Rifkin, nice to meet you.
Don Pollinger?
Yeah, we met last time. Come on in, everyone. Come on in. What's your name?
Okay. Mark.
Have a good, easy pass. What's your name? Jackie Berman. What's your name? Tana, what's your name? Nice to meet you.
So you talked about how you shouldn't look at the world as though it's a bad place and you go look at it just post-colored lenses and everything. But when I think about things like that, I try to think about how to look at the bad and get messages.
So what?
Looking at the bad in the world too.
Bad?
The bad in the world and the things that are going wrong.
Thank you.
You can also get meaning and messages from that too by looking at why it's happening.
Thank you.
Looking deeper than just the historical saying.
Okay. I would discriminate between evil and evil intentions. There's evil in this world. But most, and a small minority of people create evil, and there's also tragedy that isn't the fault of any evil inclination. There's just something that creates tragedy and evil. But human beings at their heart are not evil. Their intentions, your nose are created good and upright and noble. So Leo Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and Orwell and William Golding, the whole modern view that man was created toxic and negative. And Shem created you with Elohim. Most people are working hard to preserve that Elohim. Some people fail at it. It's a tragedy when they fail.
Do you think looking at the failure, you can find why the good is even better, or how to prevent that in some way for yourself?
Absolutely. Some people will actually say their faith in God was augmented by the Holocaust. How could it be
such? How can we see that there is this bad that's in the world and things like that when good can come from it? Like I I always struggle with the idea that someone's like, how can you understand the nature of it? You understand sometimes things like that, especially things like that. But good is coming from something else. Does that mean that it's a better force that is creating good?
But the struggle until it emerges from the suffering. You can't trivialize people's suffering just because it's an ideological, deliberate, and ideologically sound outcome. Suffering. Now, we are able maybe to turn direction onto fortune and to try to clean up important things. We feel, for example, that we're building our country in Israel. Every person is suffering from every victim of this terror is the kind of same shalom. It's a building block of Jewish history. So it's a test that you're very careful because if you have a right to suffer from others, you have to be able to not overlay philosophy to just raw emotional experience. What's your first name?
Michael Lisa.
Hi, you were talking about Reishi, and you were saying that like at the beginning of the world, like when we are created, like when Hashem like and Adam like made him like alive. But then you were also talking about like how the first like,
not a phenomenon. Yes.
Like how for the first 2,000 years of our existence, like we were kind of like keeping everyone else like awake. But then how could that like compare to the Tanakh? So like you're saying how now like we just want to like go to sleep and rest our eyes. Then how does that compare to like Bereishit? Like.
Well, we've accomplished our task 90%. The world is more or less monotheistic. Thank you. The world is monotheistic, and the world is more.
Right, but then for Bereishit, like we like became alive in the beginning, but then the end. Were they like being compared, or was it just like two separate? Oh, okay.
I was just using the okay to get back to the
end. Okay.
What's your name?
Yonina Lambert. Thank you so much.
Okay. Hey. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Okay. Chavrut, we're very, very fortunate today. This is a big opportunity for you, for our school, that we have with us, Rabbi Lori, Rav Moshe Target.